Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
College football.
Jenty, his first touch. And typical Ashton Jenty. Look at him go! You can't bring him down! Is he? Yes, he will!
We can't wait for the 2025 season.
Bo Howard with third and 11. He'll throw it. He's going for it. Jeremiah Smith, one-on-one. Game, set, match. Whenever you needed it, you got it. Will Howard to Jeremiah Smith.
And we're counting down the days to kickoff.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
I said no.
Are we there yet?
What's wrong with your ear?
Here is your college football fix, only on the Zach Gelb Show.
39 days until UNLV kicks off its football season against Idaho State, and now they have a new sheriff in town. Dan Mullen, the last few years, has been on to ESPN, but before that, he was the head man at Florida and Mississippi State, and now he's running the Rebels. And now joining us is Coach Dan Mullen. Dan, first off, congratulations. I know we haven't spoken on the air since you took the job at UNLV, so I just wanted to congratulate you on the air, and thanks so much for doing this. How you been?
I've been great. I appreciate it. I'm excited. You know, it's great to be back in, and we got a lot of great things happening in Las Vegas, and it's going to be, we're going to have a lot of fun. I mean, we're going to put on a show in a town where there's always great shows to go see. We got to find a way to be the best show in town.
Have you been to Piero's, a great restaurant in Las Vegas so far?
Of course. You got to get the veal parm there at Piero's. Big fan of the veal parm. I go though, when I do it, definitely with the penne and vodka sauce is the side dish with the Piero's veal parm.
Also, I would recommend the garbage Caesar salad, the shrimp cocktail, and the meatballs too, Coach. You know, you got to do it big in Vegas. You can't just go and just get the veal parm, all right?
Always. Hey, always. Well, you know what? Pat there is always taking care of me when we go in. She's always there waiting with a smile on her face.
Yeah, no, so, it is a tremendous restaurant. Our buddy Sully, who listens to the show, he took me there a few years ago when the Super Bowl was out there, and I just actually went to a bachelor party a few months ago in Vegas, and I took 16 guys to Piero's, and I'm surprised the place is still standing, honestly, after the damage that we did. But anyway, Dan Mullen here with us, now running UNLV. So I talked to you towards the end of the football season last year. You said you loved what you're doing at ESPN, but it had to be the right situation for you to go back to coaching. Why take the UNLV job, and why was it the proper job for you?
Well, you know, as you look at things, you look, there are a couple of things that were going to be important, right? And number one was going to be the opportunity to win a championship. And at UNLV last year, we're a game away from the college football playoff, lost to Boise in the Mount West championship game. So there's already a solid foundation. It's not a rebuild from scratch. You know, there is a solid foundation of winning in place that we just needed a little push to get to the next step. The next one was going to be facilities. I didn't want to go into a place where, you know, I mean, the last job I was at, we were probably last in the league in facilities, you know, where you go in and you have nothing, you know, you're scraping by to try to build things and try to raise money to build things and create facilities. And we have unbelievable facilities, both our football facility on campus. We played Allegiant Stadium. Everything was in place that way. And finally, for me and my family, I had a place where I wanted my kids to graduate from high school, a place I wanted to live. I love the city of Las Vegas. I think it's a great place to live, great place to raise a family, got great schools there. It's a great community. I know as most people view the Strip, right, as, you know, I think the world thinks 90% of Las Vegas is the Strip and 10% the city. And I think in reality, it's the other way around, where 90% is the city and 10% is the Strip. And so the city offers so much and such a great place to live. So it kind of checked every box. And, you know, I mean, if you would ask me 3 years ago, just on a whim, without investigating, without anything, would you be the head coach at UNLV? I would say, I don't think that would ever happen. But after being out, after investigating, learning about the program, seeing things, seeing where we are in college football and the future of the program we can build at UNLV, as you said, it kind of checked every box and hit the right situation for me to get back in.
Now, you haven't been a head coach since 2021 when you were wrapping up at Florida. You had a very good job at ESPN and you were good at it. Now you're getting thrown back into this world where there's NIL and the transfer portal, and I'm not against those things, but there's a lot of uncertainty and changes in the sport. Just look how the Mountain West is going to look this year compared to how it's going to look next year with a lot of teams moving to the Pac-12. Why want to immerse yourself outside of what you just said into this NIL and transfer portal world?
It does seem a little bit crazy, doesn't it? Right there. Like as you said, I had a great time. I had a great gig at ESPN. Loved the people at ESPN, loved working with everybody at ESPN, and really enjoyed it with the family. And you know what? There were a couple of situations last year hit, and you start to realize how much you miss being around the players, how much you miss the player development, helping guys accomplish their goals and achieve their goals. It's those little things that you miss coaching, the opportunity to impact young kids' lives and help them accomplish goals. And it just kind of was something that was still inside of me, had a fire, but as we talked, it had to be a right situation. And, there were several, there are people over the last several years that had called, even this past year, got some calls, and it didn't kind of spark a fire, and the UNLV one kind of did. And, even my wife was wondering, she was kind of like, that's like all of these things, why Las Vegas? And as I said, as I dove into it, as I dug into looking at it, researching, I said, you know what, this is a challenge that's going to excite me, and this is something I want to be a part of, and we're excited to get going this season.
Dan Mullen here with us, the new head football coach at UNLV. Being 3 years out of the game, I know you're with ESPN, but not coaching. How are you a different coach now as you get set for your first full season at UNLV?
I think over the last 3 years, one thing that's helped is you look at, as you mentioned, the massive change going on in football over the last 3 years, being able to see it from a 30,000, foot view, looking down, not dealing with all the day-to-day basics, being able to talk to coaches, do some research, see how they're handling the portal, see how things are going with NIL, seeing those things, I think certainly helped seeing it from afar. So I think, your beliefs, I don't know, I'm kind of getting older. So, I'm not, a leopard don't change their spots in some ways. I'm still going to be me. The outline of how we run our program is still going to be run the same way I've always run it. But I think having that experience and being able to see some of the adjustments from afar has certainly helped me in the approach with today's players, with the transfer portal, as you mentioned, with NIL, and how we set up the program, how we build the program, and how we help and deal with players in today's world. I think I was much more prepared kind of coming from the outside than having to have lived the daily changes over the last several years.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of changes. There are now more roster turnover and changes than ever before in college football from year to year. But Barry Odom did a good job. Obviously, UNLV is in a good spot. But how do you put your spin on it when people tune in to watch you guys play your first game? What will a Dan Mullen football team look like at UNLV?
Well, if you've seen our teams in the past, we're gonna run an exciting offense. We're gonna, run the pro spread that we created back at Bowling Green, however many years ago that was now. And we've tweaked through the years. It seems like everybody used to be a lot of fun. Nobody ran it. Now that's at every level of football, that's all you see. So maybe I have to go backwards and run the wishbone or something. But no, we're going to run the offense. We're going to be explosive, try to put up a lot of points offensively. And then defensively, Paul Gunther, our defensive coordinator, I brought in from the NFL because I wanted a very, very aggressive scheme defensively that I've always liked to have. We're going to get after people. But most importantly, you come watch us play. We're going to play with effort. I want to see a team that's going to go out there and play with unbelievable effort, play fast and hard for 60 minutes. So that, hey, we, we, the, the problem that we're going to have, right? We're in Las Vegas. There's a lot of different show options. There's a lot of different shows you can go see. So what's going to make you want to show up at Allegiant Stadium on a Saturday afternoon, right? It's going to be, right, to get to Allegiant, you want to have the best team going and, you know, and be the best show. So we got to create an exciting product out on the field, but I think our fans are going to see an exciting product of guys that play hard and love what they do and represent the university the right way.
Yeah, I know my alma mater, Temple, they were after Alex Orji, and you guys ended up getting him from Michigan. And I like Michigan football a lot, so I'm familiar with Alex Orji. You guys have him. What can fans expect out of him if they're not familiar with him?
Well, you know, Alex did such a great job at Michigan the last couple of years. He was on a national championship team. You saw it last year, Ohio State trying to tackle him, and they struggled to tackle him. He's a guy that is one at 6'3" and a half, 240 pounds of muscle. To step in front of him when he's running the ball is obviously a business decision that you have to make. But you know what's really impressed me, and what was, you know, the one that excited me to get him is his desire to come in and develop as a passer. You know, and really learn the passing game from the pocket, learn protections, learn how to develop as a complete quarterback, and he's really worked hard to do that.
Yeah, where do you think he is at in that process? We know he could run, but the throwing was a little bit of a problem last year at Michigan.
Yeah, I think it's that's the development stage of things with guys, you know, and you know, for him, it's you know, he talked a lot about the growth that he has made in understanding the position as a quarterback. Obviously, for me as the coach, my job is in games is to put guys in position to succeed on Saturday. However, you know, this whole offseason, even going into training camp, I'm all about development, the complete development of a player. And you know, we're going to develop every phase of the game, of his game, of all of our guys on the team. I want to develop every phase of everybody's game. Then as we get close, as we, you know, really get into that final 2 weeks of training camp, we're going to kind of hone it back, hone in on put everybody in a position to do what they do well, and we're going to continue to do that. You know, even with the transfer portal, it's still about player development. That's the part of football being a way that is too many people have lost the understanding of. It's still, you know, you're in college football. It's still a game of player development and what it takes to develop guys in today's day and age of football, making sure the players understand what it takes to develop in today's day and age of football. And that's been our focus.
Yeah, and that's always an interesting part to me, Dan Mullen, that I think gets lost. I know college football is a little bit of an older game now, but still, you're dealing with young adults, and when things don't go perfectly the right way at one stop, you wonder how their confidence will be heading into a next stop, not just for Alex, but the way that you guys have hit the portal. How do you kind of assess if things didn't go necessarily the right way, one way that you could still get the best out of that kid under your watch?
Well, you know, that's one of the things is guys come in, especially portal players come in on visits. That's our number one discussion is about development, of making sure we understand all the whys. Why did you leave where you're at? Where do you want to go? How do you expect to get there? And as on their journey and growth in college and their development, they have got to understand that developmental stage. And at some point, you know, you have to worry about development. And we spend a lot of time on that in recruiting. And obviously, you know, I think for us, the guys that really understand that, you know, when you sit down and you talk about, here's the steps we're going to take to develop you into becoming a great football player. You know, they in the transfer world, guys have a lot of options of a lot of different schools that they can go to. And, you know, if development is important to them, you're going to see them probably choose UNLV. If there's other things that are important to them, then they might not choose us. But, you know, I think that is something that gets sorted out in our plan of how we lay it out for guys in the portal. This is where you're at. Here's where you are at this stage of your career. Here's some steps I think you need to take to get to where you want to go. We're going to help you accomplish that, but you got to buy in and believe in what we're doing for that to happen. And I think if you're upfront and honest with the guys from the beginning, it's a lot easier for them to see that and to buy in.
I know you brought in Anthony as well from Virginia. Have you named a starting quarterback yet?
No, we have so much. I mean, heck, we've, you know, with both those guys, when you really look at it, you have some OTAs and walkthrough stuff on the field where they get to introduce the offense to them. You know, then you go through spring ball, and now we're going into the training camp. So it's really time three learning the offense. We're still very much in the, to me, in that developmental evaluation stage. The guy's learning what to do and how to do it. I don't think we've gotten to the why we're doing it all yet, which we need for the quarterbacks, with them on the field. So it'll be interesting to see, this third time going through the installations, really learning things, how fast they pick it up, how comfortable they are. And we'll see, where they're at by the time we kick it off. We get a week zero game, so we'll get to make that decision probably before everybody else in the country.
Yeah, if you had to start a game tomorrow, who would start? Just wondering, Coach Dan Mullen.
Holy cow! I don't even know. I would guarantee they both would play.
Gotcha.
Tomorrow. Yeah. They both would get in the game. What's interesting, they both bring a different skills. That's where I would be. If I had to go play tomorrow, I'd play both of them and see if you can take away their different skill sets as we come after you. If you know me and my background, I want to come out with you with as many different weapons all over the field as we can. And they both have a lot of talent. So I think you'd see both of them and try to see if you can figure out how to stop either one.
Yeah, and Jaden Thomas had a heck of a year last year. And Moore's even going to be thrown on his plate. It also helps when you have a back like that, too.
Yeah, he's, Jet's a guy that is one of the top playmakers coming back to the Mountain West Conference this year. He can do it with the ball in his hands, running out of the backfield, running downhill. You get him out in the perimeter in the pass game, and he's dangerous with the ball in his hands in space. He's a complete back. He's not going to be, when you look at him at his big monster back, but he's not a slight scat back. He can do it all and bring a lot to the table, and he's the guy we're going to make sure gets the ball in his hands in a lot of different situations and a lot of different areas of the field to see what type of matchups we can create and problems we can create for defenses to allow him to go do his thing in the open field.
Wrap it up with Dan Mullen, the new head football coach at UNLV. They'll be kicking off their season in week zero. The other day, Dan, Greg McElroy said that he talked to someone in the know, and he doesn't believe from what he talked to with that person that Nick Saban has done coaching. Do you see Nick Saban ever returning to coaching?
I don't see it, but, Greg McElroy knows a lot more than I do right there in those situations of people in the know. Listen, I put it this way, in the Nick Saban era of coaching, there's only one person besides Nick Saban in the know, and that's Miss Terry. So if he didn't talk to Nick or Miss Terry, I don't think you're in the know in that nest right there of the people that are the decision makers in the Saban family right there. So, I think Nick, we'll see. I think he's enjoying his time at ESPN like I really enjoyed my time at ESPN. And, give him another year or two and we'll see. Maybe he gets that gets antsy again and gets that itch kind of like I did to get back out there on the field. And we'll see if he does come back. But I don't know if I'd expect to see Nick back on the sidelines anytime soon.
And then two more for you, just because you've been around some of the best quarterbacks. And obviously, we heard Paul Feinbaum say that Arch Manning could be the most successful quarterback in college football since Tim Tebow. There's a lot of hype around Arch Manning, just with his family last name. People are talking about him winning the Heisman this year. Texas winning the national championship. Do you think he's ready for the moment for this upcoming season?
Well, I think the big thing, one, when you're going with Tim Tebow, that's a big one right there. You're talking about three Heisman Trophy finalists, two national titles, multiple-time All-American, multiple-time College Football Player of the Year. But the one thing I will say that I'm really impressed with Arch Manning, and you know, I hit on it earlier, is, you see he's a guy right now, and you're looking at, go back and look at his recruiting class, look at all the different quarterbacks. All of them worried about a lot of different things. I don't know how many of those things were development. Everything was playing time. How many yards am I throwing? What's the offense? What am I doing? And not how am I developing and getting better every single day? And the one thing that I think that you have to really watch out for Arch Manning is, one, obviously you've got to see him play some. I think he's an extremely talented young man. But he has also spent the time in his career doing it the right way and developing. So the stage is not going to be too big. He's not going to be inexperienced. He's going to be ready for the moment because he has spent, not because of his last name, because he spent the last couple of years developing in an old school way, the right way, to be ready to get on that field and go make plays. And so I think that gives him an edge over a lot of quarterbacks that maybe have more experience but are on their second or third school I would give him the edge over a lot of those guys as well because of the development stage of playing for Sark, understanding what development is, and being in the system for a long time.
And then just one more, I got to ask you because it's Florida-driven. DJ Lagway, clearly a lot of hype. We saw him a little bit last year, and it was successful. Billy Napier is now back. I can't wait. I know you're focused on UNLV, Dan, but since I have you here, I can't wait to see how we're talking about DJ Lagway at the end of the year.
I got to see him being on TV and doing stuff last year. You got to see. I mean, I think he's a tremendous talent. Obviously, those steps from year one to year two are huge, and to see – you know, where his development is, you know, and again, that's my old school ways. It always gets to development of the, you know, I think that's where you should see huge steps between, you know, your year one being on the field and getting that initial experience into year two, where you're comfortable being the guy on the field. And I'd be really interested to see the development and how much he's been developed this offseason to take those next steps.
Well, Coach, good luck this upcoming season. We appreciate the time, as always. Be well, and eat a lot of Pierros for us, okay?
Oh, hey, you name it. There's great restaurants. I think I'm heading to tomorrow night. I'll be at Barry's over there at Circa.
Delicious.
We have Midwest Media Days coming up, so I'm going to head to Circa. We're at Circa Hotel. You haven't been there, so I'll be heading to Barry's there in one of the top steakhouses. There's just so many great restaurants in the city. It's a lot of fun. We're never going to run out of things to do in Las Vegas.
Go to the Legacy Club, but the Circa Swim. Yeah, Coach, you'll be in heaven with the pools and all the TVs. It's unbelievable.
I can't wait. Hey, we have multiple bye weeks this year, so maybe I got to hit the pool for a bye week and just see every single college football game at one time going on. So,
Coach, thanks so much. We appreciate it. You're the best.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
All righty, welcome back in. Good chat right there with Dan Mullen. Excited to see what he can do this upcoming season at UNLV. Back to Arch Manning, as you did have four schools speak today: Georgia, Auburn, Texas, Tennessee. It was their turn at SEC Media Days. Let's get to Arch in just a bit. This was Chris Plank with us yesterday. He's a part of the Oklahoma Sooner Radio Network, and he's been covering Oklahoma football for a long time. Texas, Oklahoma, we know the rivalry and everything. This is Chris Plank with us yesterday, where he thinks people have set the expectations to an unmeetable stage for one Arch Manning.
I like Arch a lot. I think that he's been given expectations that are unmeetable. I bristle whenever you have people saying he's the greatest quarterback since Tim Tebow. We had some pretty good quarterbacks between Tebow and now, right? Joe Burrow, Baker Mayfield was pretty special, but I get the hype. I go back and forth because there's this part of me that says he couldn't get the job away from Quinn Ewers, who then went in the seventh round of the draft. But Quinn Ewers was also the highest rated recruit we've ever had in college football. We'll see. We're going to find out quick, because it's Ohio State. I'm a believer that he's good. I don't think that he is number one pick in the draft. I think these expectations that have been laid on him are unmeetable. And I think Texas is going to struggle. Zach, I think unrealistic expectations have been placed on this young man. And I'll tell you what, it wouldn't surprise me if he's back in college next year. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he's back at Texas. He's telling people now that he wants to come back for another year.
Hey, Stu, I'm going to ask you something here. And I just thought about it right now, because Stu's a Duke fan, so I got to ask you this. Cooper Flagg this past year was the National Player of the Year, got to the Final Four, and they gagged that game away up against Houston. It was one of the more stunning sporting events. Outside of 28-3, you could argue it's the most stunning sporting event I've ever seen in person. Just wild how Houston won that game. And Cooper Flagg ended up being the number one overall pick. Cooper Flagg is expected to be a generational talent in the NBA. Was his run at Duke, for where the hype was it successful? Even after winning a National College Player of the Year award, getting to a Final Four, but then blowing that game and becoming the number one overall pick, did you view that as a successful run for Cooper Flagg at Duke?
Yes, because he was such a great player, and I think once you get deep into the tournament, I think it's kind of random. Like, they did choke, definitely, but I don't put that all on him. And I just think, again, you get to a stage where it's just different than football.
7 with 45 seconds left, though?
It was a choke job, but again, like I just think the tournament's so random where I can't say that the fact they didn't win it makes like the 1 year a failure.
But that's kind like the fact that that's even a debate, if you think about it. The guy won a national, he was the best player in college basketball, had the team in the Final Four, and was the number one overall pick. And there's going to be a contingent of Duke fans that are going to sit there and be like, yeah, Cooper Flagg was awesome. But am I going to sit there and say he was a great success at Duke with the way that they blew that Final Four game? At least it's a debate.
Definitely.
And it kind of is reminding me here of Arch. Now, Cooper Flagg was one and done at Duke. Arch has been sitting there and waiting for 2 years. But now it's his program. Think about what we talked about earlier. The standard for Arch Manning this year, he could be a finalist for a Heisman Trophy. Not win it, and get Texas back to the Final Four of the college football playoff, and people would still be disappointed. It's almost as if he has to win the Heisman Trophy, or he has to at least get to a national championship game. Because Texas, the last 2 years, they've been one of the last four teams standing, now different than a 4 and a 12-team playoff, I get that. But one of those two things, either you win a Heisman Trophy, or you get to a national championship game, and even if they lose in the national championship game, and then let's say he comes back and he is just a Heisman finalist the next year and does win a national championship. People are going to be saying, was the Arch Manning era really all that great? And he could still end up being the number one overall pick. So that's, to me, I think Chris Plank is right. Think about how stupid high we're setting this bar. Where just getting to the Final Four of the college football playoff is probably not good enough. Just getting and being a Heisman Trophy finalist is not good enough. Like, Arch Manning either has to win a national championship or win a Heisman Trophy for probably us to look back at his run at Texas and be like, okay, that was great. Stu, let's say he plays there 2 years. He wins a Heisman Trophy this year, is a finalist next year. In 1 year, let's say he loses in the second round of the college football playoff this year, right? They pull an Oregon, where maybe they were the best team in the country, and then they just run into a buzzsaw. And coming off the bye and the layoff, they lose. But then the next year, he gets them to a national championship game, but they don't win it. Is just winning a Heisman Trophy at Texas good enough for us to look back at the Arch Manning era and say, hey, that's a super success?
I think he has to win it all in 1 to 2 years. Yeah. I think he does.
Especially if it's 2 years. Now, if it's just 1 year, if it's just, hey, let's say this year he's a finalist for the Heisman Trophy and he gets Texas to the Final Four of the college football playoff, and then he bolts the NFL and becomes number one overall pick. Do you think that'd be viewed as a success from where the hype was?
Probably not. It's hard. Yeah,
and that's
where
Chris Plank is right. Stu, you just said, hey, if he wins a Heisman Trophy but doesn't win a national championship in 2 years, it's not a super success. And that's where it's so tough in a team sport for Arch Manning to meet the hype. If this guy wins a national championship in the next 2 seasons at Texas, and they're knocking on the door the last 2 years, and we know they have the funds, or he wins a Heisman Trophy, man, hats off to him. But with all that is set up so high and the bar being so high for him. And quite frankly, in college basketball, it's a lot different because these guys are now a one and done. But I would say the most hyped up it wasn't even Cooper Flagg, Zion. You had Barack Obama sitting courtside for one of those games, for crying out loud. President Barack Obama. And in the last 10 years, the last decade, maybe even north of that, but in the last decade, I don't know if there's been a more hyped college athlete than Arch Manning. And all of it factors in. Family lineage, all-time great. Texas, huge brand. And then also this wait, this 2-year wait to actually see him be the guy from start to finish. Let's hear from Eli Manning. This was on Get Up on ESPN on Arch Manning, his nephew, for this upcoming season.
I'm optimistic. I think he's going to do great. Of course, there's going to be some ups and downs. He's still a young quarterback. It's not going to all be perfect. I think probably the expectations are unattainable of what people think he's just going to be, come in and just be automatic. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be interceptions, but there's going to be a lot of touchdowns. There'll be a lot of good things. And each week, it'll be an opportunity for him to learn something new.
And then let's hear from Arch Manning. He did speak at SEC Media Days earlier today and all the hype entering this season.
I'm not really sure how they get these opinions, because I've only played, what, two games? But I guess that's nice of them to say, but, you know, that doesn't mean anything. Talk is cheap. I got to go prove it.
And I'm assuming that's going back to the Paul Feinbaum comment, when Paul Feinbaum said he's the best college quarterback since Tim Tebow. There's been a lot of good college quarterbacks since then. You know, Lamar Jackson, Johnny Manziel, Robert Griffin III, Cam, Jameis Winston, Joe Burrow. Like we could sit here and do this all. Sam Bradford, Baker Mayfield. But you look back at what Joe Burrow did, and that was the one that really stood out to me. In Feinbaum with his comments, Joe Burrow at LSU was undefeated, won the national championship in 2019, threw for 5,671 yards with 60 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. As much as I like Arch, and he had a 76.3 completion percentage, I'm just going out on a limb. I don't think Arch Manning is doing that this year. I just don't. But that Texas schedule, they open up the year with Ohio State. Is that just a win for all? A noon game, 12 o'clock, Labor Day weekend, Saturday, Texas at Ohio State. There are going to be so many takes about Arch Manning. If he wins, he's the golden boy has arrived. If he loses, I could tell you that next day, and then also that ensuing Monday. Oh, is he really worth the hype? Is he? Was he worth the hype? Arch Manning, he was just giving everybody, like, it's going to be insufferable if he loses that game. The rest of the Texas schedule, they play San Jose State, UTEP, Sam Houston. Wow, great game, then 3 cupcakes. Big bad SEC, let me tell you. Florida, at Florida, you get Arch and DJ Lagway. Oklahoma, Johnny Mateer and Arch Manning. Kentucky, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt. Then they get big bad Georgia, Arkansas, and A&M. Wow. You know, 5 games you got to watch. You must watch on that schedule. And anything could happen on any given Saturday in college football. But the Ohio State game, the Florida game, Oklahoma, Georgia, and A&M. And right now those times, Ohio State's at noon on August 30th. Florida's to be determined on October 4th. October 11th, it's 3:30 p.m. Red River up against Oklahoma, obviously. And then they are at Georgia Saturday, November 15th, to be determined. And then to end the season, November 28th on that Friday, Texas A&M, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ABC. Alrighty, we will take a timeout. We'll come on back. We'll update some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We'll get to a news brief on the other side. Update time first. Here is El Capitan, Marco Belletti.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at WesleyFinancialGroup.com. Let's hear from the head coach of the Georgia Bulldogs. That is Kirby Smart. He had to make a little joke about some of the rumors of Nick Saban coming on back and coaching.
Yeah, I called him and offered him Muschamp's job, but he was overqualified, so he wasn't interested. No, I heard all the scuttlebutt and everything about it. I almost laughed. It was like somebody needed something interesting to talk about yesterday, so they chose to go to Coach Saban to do it. You know, the game's better with him involved, and he is involved. He is passionate about it, but make no mistake about it, the boss at home is going to make that call for him, not him.
I'll tell you, he made a joke, but there's nothing worse than when you make a joke. And maybe people were laughing at that press conference, but the microphones didn't pick it up whatsoever. So, hot take there. I guess Nick Saban's not going to be a defensive analyst over at Georgia for this upcoming season. Let's go to one more from Kirby Smart. So, this was on 680 The Fan in Atlanta with Brian Finneran, the former Atlanta Falcons wide receiver. They also asked Kirby Smart about Nick Saban's future.
No, I don't believe it'll happen, but I certainly know he would be good for the game, and I know he loves being with his grandkids, and he's not gonna get off that couch without Miss Terry letting him. So that's one of those hard things. He's got to bypass her first.
And also, let's get to Lane Kiffin and the rumors that Nick Saban could be returning to college football.
I wouldn't be surprised. I kind of always thought that was going to happen. I kind of thought it happened after 1 year. And I say that just because even seeing recent stuff with him and talking to him on the phone, at first of all, I have no knowledge that he's coming back. I don't think anybody does that. He's so sharp still. I almost feel like it's a waste that he's not. No disrespect to the media and what you guys do, but his ability to coach players and change lives, and he's so good at it. I just think he'll be back, whether that's NFL or college.
Let me ask you this, guys. Stu, if you were Nick Saban, would you come back to just coach, period? Not NFL or college. After 1 year being out, probably not going to be 2 years out, would you want to coach again if you were him?
No, I think he's obviously proven everything he has to. I don't think he needs to come back. I wouldn't if I were him.
Samter?
No, but if Kirby wins like another national title or two,
maybe
he wants to just come back in and just re-cement his place.
Mm. If I'm Nick Saban, I'm not coming back to coach college. I would coach in the NFL. And I know we talked about a potential reunion with the Miami Dolphins. Samter has thrown out the Dallas Cowboys. Even throughout the Saints, maybe one and done for Kellen Moore. All right, maybe the Dolphins could be a little bit intriguing because you got Tua, you got Jalen Waddle, Alabama players. Be fun to see him go back to Miami where it did not go well the last time he was there. But I talked about this yesterday. I'll say it again. If I'm Nick Saban, I'm only coming back for one job that could be realistically open, and that's Cincinnati Bengals. Now, I know that organization is cheap. I don't know if they would splurge for Nick Saban, but after this year, Zach Taylor has one more year left on his contract. If they miss the playoffs again, you need a new head football coach. And if you're Nick Saban, you could ride back into the NFL with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins. Come on. Hello. So I don't trust that the Bengals would be able to get it done. But if I'm Nick Saban, I'm going to Miss Terry, and I'm saying, Miss Terry, enjoy this year. We're going to root against the Cincinnati Bengals, and then I want to go coach with the Cincinnati Bengals and go get them a Super Bowl, and that will be it for me. Because look how close they were a few years ago, the Cincinnati Bengals, and they've been moving the wrong direction. You bring in Nick Saban, and you want to talk about, like, there's nothing else for him to do in college football to cement his legacy. He's already the greatest of all time. He goes to the NFL, where, by the way, Urban Meyer was just a disaster. And he rights his wrong in the NFL from all those years ago, and you go win a Super Bowl, and you take down Patrick Mahomes in the AFC Championship game, and then whoever's standing there from the NFC, and you win a Super Bowl in the NFL, my oh my. That actually does something for the legacy of Nick Saban. So if I'm Nick Saban, I would go back to the NFL, and I would want to coach the Cincinnati Bengals a year from now. All righty, let's keep it moving. One more from Lane Kiffin on the flaws with the college football playoff ranking system.
I just think the system doesn't take into the scheduling properly. And then when you look at these other sports, you see teams, you know, that go on to win that weren't in the top because played a really hard schedule and you lose some games. You know, you lose a game in overtime on the road. You see these times all the time. You go to the Super Bowl and here's the 5 seed in the Super Bowl. So I just think that it doesn't account to that.
Here's my problem with Ole Miss and with Lane Kiffin and his bitching here. You had a bad loss to Kentucky, 20-17. Then you lost in overtime to LSU. You had 2 losses last year and still had a good chance to make the college football playoff. But your quarterback had some really poor throws up against Florida and you lost. If you lose 3 times in a college football season and you don't make the college football playoff, I don't really give a crap what you have to say. You weren't good enough. Like, you could argue, yes, Ole Miss is a better football team than SMU. But Ole Miss didn't do enough to make it clear and obvious, and they had multiple chances to do that last year, and they failed. Let's go to Johnny Manziel. He was on the Always College Football podcast with Greg McElroy. What if NIL was around when he played?
I would have taken a pay cut had I gone to the NFL. I mean, that's really, really what it would have been. I mean, it is crazy times that we're living in. And I think, you know, in a lot of areas, still figuring out exactly how to make it work the right way, where it's not just the biggest boosters and the richest schools. I mean, you know, guys who are playing at a high level, who are really noticeable and really marketable are making a great amount of money off the field to the point where guys are, you know, have the opportunity to stay in school rather than having to go, you know, to the NFL early.
Yeah. Like, I know he wasn't the greatest quarterback I've ever seen, but you want to talk about sensations? Johnny Manziel, when he was in college football, he was a sensation. With the money sign, partying with Drake. Do you know how much money that guy would have made? He made a lot of money anyway from it. It's well documented. But how much more money he would have made if everything that he was doing was actually allowed and he could benefit off his own name, image, and likeness in a public way? Oh, my God. Tyre McLaurin is unhappy with the Washington Commanders. Here is Tyre McLaurin on his contract dispute.
Yeah, I've been pretty frustrated, I'm not going to lie. Everything that has transpired up until this point has been disappointing and frustrating. I've wanted to continue my career here. I've created my life here. You know, my wife and I have bought our first home here. So this has been somewhere where I've always wanted to be. And just to see how things have played out has been disappointing. Obviously, I understand everything's a business, but at the same time, like, I want to put myself in a position where, you know, I'm valued and, you know, I feel appreciated and things like that. And, you know, unfortunately, that hasn't transpired the way I wanted to.
Here's the tricky part. This guy has done everything right for an organization that used to be dysfunctional. He turns 30 in early September. It's tricky here because his contract's up at the end of the season. I think if you're the Commanders, you have things moving in the right direction right now. I think you got to give him like $33 million a year on a four-year deal, and you just front load it. You front load the first two where you could get out of it in some way after the first 2 years, and you buy yourself some safety there. That's what I would do if I'm the Commanders, because if McLaurin, and I don't know if he's going to sit out, I don't know if he's going to miss games and all that stuff, but if you take him off the team this year, sure, you still got Jaden Daniels as a stud. Yeah, you brought in Deebo Samuel. Yeah, you still got Brian Robinson in the backfield, but Terry McLaurin was a touchdown machine and had good chemistry last year. I know he's not been a touchdown machine for most of his career, but last year he was a touchdown machine with Jaden Daniels. Let's go to Terry McLaurin. He says the time is now to get a deal done.
There has to be some active discussions, you know what I mean? Like I said, we haven't talked in over a month, and obviously with camp around the corner, like, it's becoming a little bit of crunch time. And, you know, obviously you want to be in a position where you're building to what we did last year, and Jaden and I continue to build along with the offense. And that was the thing, like, before I took a step back, it was things were going great on the field, and you know, the connection and the offense and the energy was just amazing. And so to see where it was then and where it's at now is definitely disappointing. So I don't necessarily know what happens next, but without any progressive discussion, it's kind of hard to see how I step on the field.
And there you go. That's the big part. They haven't been having discussions. How you step on the field. Oh, that's ugly. Finally, let's hear Pat McAfee last night on ESPN introduce Cal Raleigh, the big dumper who ended up winning the home run derby.
Seattle Mariners, hailing from Colleen, North Carolina. A man who's doing something that no catcher has ever done in the history of the sport, with the fattest ass in all of professional sports.
And leading the big leagues with 38 homers so far.
Ladies and gentlemen, Big Dumper Cal Raleigh.
So there you go. You get the WWE feel in the home run derby. I actually thought the home run derby lost my attention last night. I didn't have the attention span for it. It's just way too long. Go back to the 10-out formula, please. That format. And also ESPN, learn how to shoot it. You have a split screen. I was lost with James Wood. I had no clue how many home runs he hit. And Ravitch just has no energy. Robot Ravitch, that Carl Ravitch, just zero energy. The on-field reporter was good with giving both languages. I thought that made it easy, but geez, watching that last night, it was tough. And I think a lot of it was just because of the poor camera work. We get to a little overreaction, proper reaction. Nuts!
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic. It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.